Welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, a weekly news digest covering events in Israel. It's relevant and accurate information you need to know, direct from the Holy Land. You're listening to Front Page Jerusalem.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, the voice of Israel to the world, brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel in the city of the great king, Jerusalem. I'm Earl Cox.
And I'm Kevin Howard in Jerusalem.
As the headlines continue to showcase the gearing up of a 2020 presidential election in the United States, with the multiple of hopefuls in the Democrat primary, there is another election just around the corner that could have implications for the nation of Israel as they elect their next new prime minister. Although many consider the U.S. elections as a simple two-party decision, the election process in Israel is much different for some. Too confusing to even think about, a matter of fact. With multiple parties involved and the election of a new parliament during the election cycle, Israel's election process is very unique in its own right. To find out more about the Israeli election process and its unique components, Kevin Howard recently spoke with Shlomo Gordon in Jerusalem to have him shed some light on the building of a coalition government in Israel. We'll bring you that informative interview in just a moment, but first, let's hear from the CFI Jerusalem News Desk, where David Milburn has the recent headlines from Israel. David?
Thanks, Earl. Jason Greenblatt's announcement recently of his resignation as U.S. President Donald Trump's Mideast peace envoy came just a few weeks before the administration's declared target date for the release of its long-awaited peace plan. The White House, which has pushed back the publication of its proposal multiple times, has been on record for months that it will finally unveil the contents shortly after Israel's September 17th election. Expectations for the plan's success, at least in terms of its ability to facilitate an agreement between the parties, have been uniformly low, but veterans of Israeli-Palestinian diplomacy said that Greenblatt's move suggests that Trump's team itself may lack confidence in it. Through his social media presence, Greenblatt, who is officially said to be quitting to return to New Jersey to be with his wife and six children, and who will remain available immediately after the plan is rolled out, has been a vocal defender of Israel and the Netanyahu government. Now, before we return to Earl, here's today's This Page in History.
On September 19, 1952, was the television debut of The Adventures of Superman, the small screen version of the hero created by two Jewish boys, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, in 1938. With the popularity of the superhero genre in current popular culture, through TV and movies, we acknowledge the great influence Jewish artists have had and are having. The Superman character was actually denounced as a Jew by the Nazi Goebbels and was followed up with the Captain America character by two other Jewish boys, Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, created as a response to the Nazi menace. Currently, the realization of industry icon Stan Lee's vision has exploded into an entire studio birthed out of Marvel comic book characters and has stimulated a multi-billion dollar rivalry internationally, with films featuring DC comic characters, none more prominent than Wonder Woman being portrayed by a former Miss Israel, Gal Gadot, making her one of the most popular actresses in history, not just Jewish history. Jewish creativity has carved quite a niche in the entertainment industry, and its effect on the entire society reverberates.
Welcome back, everybody. For many, the Israeli election process is a bit confusing in its parliamentary process, as well as its election of a prime minister from the winning party. Our Kevin Howard recently spoke with Shlomo Gordon to find out more about this interesting process.
Thanks, Earl. I'm talking today with Mr. Shlomo Gordon. He's a former member of the Zehut political party in Israel. He's joining us by phone. Shlomo, thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you.
Shlomo, could you please explain the current position of the Zehut Party, your involvement in it, and its standing with regard to the Israeli elections?
Yeah, so I was, until recently, a candidate on the Zehut Party list. I was number six on the list, which means that if we got about 5% of the vote, then that would have made me a Knesset member, potentially a member of the coalition or the opposition. But our party made a decision not to run this time around for all sorts of different political reasons. And we made a deal with Benjamin Netanyahu's party, the Likud party, the ruling party, to not run this time. But the party still exists. The party members, each one does what seems right to him, but the party itself is officially going with the Likud and supporting Netanyahu in these elections. I, at the moment, am staying pretty neutral. I feel like there's too many question marks, and I don't want to say anything too good about anything too good. Don't want to say anything too bad. There's just too many question marks, too many things that I haven't gotten answers on yet regarding the deal. But that's where I am right now. So, if you would have talked to me 2 weeks ago, I would have said I'm a Knesset candidate. But today, that's no longer true.
So educate our listeners. Give us some insight into the Israeli election process.
Basically, Israel is a parliamentary democracy. So people who are from countries that have, like the U.S., that have a two-party system, it can seem very chaotic. And though each system certainly has its own advantages, just about anyone can start a party, but there is a minimum threshold that you need to pass in order to get in. And it is a necessary thing, because otherwise you could have dozens of parties that have one or two seats in the Israeli Knesset. There's 120 seats in the Israeli parliament. If you have dozens of parties with one or two seats, and in the coalition agreements where you need to get a coalition together of 61 Knesset members, then you can imagine that each small party would be trying to get, you know, I want to be a minister of this, I want to be a minister of this. And then there's not, you'd have to invent ministerial positions just to give everyone something. So there is logic in having so that's part of what gives some stability. But there's also a problem with that a lot of parties, like my party, was at the risk of not passing the threshold. And we are definitely considered very much on the right of the political spectrum. And so the right has been in power in Israel for quite some time, depending on how exactly you define it. And the main reason why I voted for the deal with the Likud for us to drop out of running in return for a few different promises, the main reason was because I saw that where we were going, we were not going to pass the threshold. Sure. And then you get blamed on, ruining, on our party bringing down the right-wing government that people have gotten used to. So that's part of how it works now. So again, back to the idea of a parliamentary democracy. So if you need to get a majority of 120, you need to get 61 seats. In the past, the right has had no problem getting 65, 66 seats, but recently a bizarre turn of events has happened. In the past elections, Avigdor Lieberman of the Yisrael Beiteinu party, he decided that he's going to force what's called a unity government, where you have a coalition. He doesn't want to have the ultra-Orthodox in the coalition, and he wants the right and the left. He wants Netanyahu and Benny Gantz and their parties to be sitting in the coalition together. And he's decided that he's going to force what's called a unity government on both of them. If we back up for a moment to the previous elections, which anyone who follows a little bit of what's going on here might say, wait, weren't the elections 3 months ago? And the answer is yes, they were. But in the coalition, there shouldn't have been any problem to make a coalition agreement. There was good, I don't remember, 63, 64, 65 seats for the right. And that, of course, included Avigdor Lieberman and the Yisrael Beiteinu party. They have voting bases mainly Russian immigrants, Jewish Russian immigrants to Israel. For some reason, during the coalition agreements, I don't want to give the ultra-Orthodox parties everything they want. They want too much. They want this. They want that. And I'm sure there was a lot of truth in his demands, but in the end, he got most of what he wanted, almost all of it, and he dropped it in the end. And it seems that he understood that if he went up against the ultra-Orthodox, all the people in Israel who hate the ultra-Orthodox, he'll be their king. And according to the polls, that worked for him. He only had, I think, 5 seats, and now he's polling at 10, 11 seats. So the method of baseless hatred from one group of Jews to another group of Jews, unfortunately very effective at helping you rise up in the polls. And essentially, if he could have gotten just about everything that he wanted, and he didn't go with the coalition agreement, and so that's why we have, that's the real reason that we have these elections this round. He made us go to elections again. Okay, so what does he want now? So now he's saying, I want a government without the ultra-Orthodox. I want what's called a unity government. I want the right and the left together. I want Netanyahu and his party Likud and Gantz and his party Kahol Levan, blue and white. I want both of these parties to be together in the coalition together with me. And maybe one or two small parties from the right, from the left, it doesn't matter. There's no ultra-Orthodox. No ultra-Orthodox, no Arabs. So that's what's going on now. And so this puts a huge question mark over the right-wing government, because for a while now, it's been clear that the right can easily have anywhere between 63, 64, and 67, 68, depending on which parties are running and the parties past the threshold and this and that. And now, even in the best situations, even in the most optimistic polls, it's not clear how it's going to happen.
Can you comment a bit on the apparent obsession with polls and the role of the media influence that may be playing on the outcome of these elections?
Yeah, there's so many levels of it. The polls, you know, it's funny because sometimes you'll see in the polls, let's say, of Israel Hayom, Israel Today, known as a very pro-Netanyahu paper, you'll see actually the right doing less well in the polls. And in the left-wing polls, you'll see the left doing less well. So it's a lot different than if people remember what happened in the U.S. elections of Hillary Clinton was for sure president. They were already printing newspapers and everything to affect public opinion. In Israel, it's like they're still trying to affect public opinion, but they do it in an opposite way by saying, making someone on the right sees that Netanyahu doesn't have a coalition, and he says, "Oh man, I better get out and vote." Yeah, so it's negative psychology, and on the left, the same thing. So it's pretty funny how that works. So there's that. Then there's the issue of parties that are near the threshold. So I experienced that as being in the Zahut party. In the previous elections, we were actually polling as high as 7 seats right up to the election. At the last minute, that we had a whole negative campaign running against us. So in the end, we got 100,000 votes, and you need 130,000 votes to 130,000 votes to pass the threshold, which translates to 0 seats. This time around, the media was, instead of attacking us, they were just completely ignoring us. And then the polls, it's hard to say, you know, if they were manipulating the polls to get even lower, to not give people hope that maybe if they vote for us, then we'll pass. And we're doing very bad on the polls, and so the polls do put pressure on public opinion. It makes people think, well, it looks like Zahut isn't going to pass, so I'm not going to vote for Yamina, another party that claims to be right of the Likud, and now run by Ayala Shaked. I'll vote for them instead. And then in the polls they start answering that they're going to vote for Yamina, even though they would vote for. And so it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
We'd like to urge everyone listening to continue to pray for the nation of Israel and her people as they go through another election process during this very important time in history for the Middle East. Right now, though, we need to take a short break so that you can hear about a very tremendous outreach program at Christian Friends of Israel that's making a significant difference in the lives of some very exceptional people in Israel today.
Hmm. Most Holocaust survivors live in two realities, the present and the past. Their present memories are often fading, and it takes an effort to remember daily tasks, while the past often holds their most vivid memories. Raya goes to bed while still light. She watches a movie, takes medication to help her to fall asleep quickly, but often dark images of SS guards and barking dogs fill her dreams, becoming as real as it was over 75 years ago when she escaped a Nazi killing raid. A reminder that she will never again see her family, never will be able to hide in her mother's arms. My name is Olga Kopilova, and I'm the coordinator of CFI's Forsake Them Not project. Every month, my team and I travel across Israel to visit dozens of people like Raya, Holocaust survivors who came home to Israel years ago, but who still are seeking a place of refuge and peace. We listen to their stories and share in their sorrows and comfort them with the promises of God of Israel. These survivors are very precious to the heart of God, and we consider it an honor and a privilege to care for these dear people, to build friendship, and to show them the compassion and love God has for them. Thank you for helping us to help them.
Christian Friends of Israel's project, Forsake Them Not. Just one more way we're making a difference in Israel, one life at a time. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to our continuing discussion between Front Page Jerusalem's Kevin Howard and Shlomo Gordon as they talk about the election process in Israel and the possible implications of the United States administration's deal of the century concerning Israel and the Arab-Palestinians in the Middle East.
Thanks again, Earl. And for those of you just joining us, I am talking today with Mr. Shlomo Gordon. He's a former member of the Zehut Party in Israel. Shlomo, how realistic is it for the public to believe the pre-election promises that are being made by all parties?
When you have a politician comes and says, I'm going to do this and this before the election so that people will vote for him, there needs to be some real thing that is, there needs at least to come out and sign a document, at least something, sure, that later on people can come and say, you promised that you were going to do this, and then still, you can't force them to do it, but you can, you know, it will hurt the reputation in the future.
Okay, here's the big question. How relevant is it to the so-called deal of the century that's coming up in the run-up to these elections?
Yes, okay, so this is a great question, and this is the main thing that I'm glad you brought me on today to talk about, because I have kind of unique take on the deal of the century. So the deal of the century is, it's Trump, it's going to be big, it's going to be made out of gold. Trump is sending, you know, Jared Kushner and Jason Greenblatt, who actually recently resigned. So the fact that Jason Greenblatt resigned makes even more see it's really Jared Kushner's deal. The fact of all of that just shows it's such an obvious show of friendship. It's pro-Israel bias. I mean, he's saying, I'm very clearly pro-Israel, and I don't care about the other side, and I'm fine with that, but it makes it so clear to me that Trump is being a pretty smart guy. He knows, and Netanyahu as well, they both know there's no chance that the Arabs are going to accept any deal if it's a Jared Kushner deal. If all the people doing it are either, you know, Trump or his Jewish son-in-law or Netanyahu or another Jewish guy, it's so clear that the Palestinian side, it's so clear that Abu Mazen would not agree to this deal, no matter what it is, even without seeing the deal. And so it's interesting that in all of the stages, all of the meetings, all of the summits, there were Saudi Arabians, and now I saw something about Canada receiving Palestinian refugees, and this and that, all of these different, this global, so like I said, deal of the century, a sophisticated, big deal that there's no chance that the Palestinian side is going to accept. So why invest so much effort if the other side isn't going to accept it. Because there's going to be options to apply aspects of it unilaterally that you don't need the other side to agree. For example, if Trump wants to do something nice to the Palestinian people and he wants to work out a deal where Canada receives, I think it was 60,000 Palestinian refugees that are living in Syria and 40,000 that are living in Lebanon. Okay? If Trump wants to make that deal with Canada, then why not? So then that's something nice for the other side. And if Trump wants to give Netanyahu the go-ahead to go ahead and annex settlement blocks, or like where I live in Bat Ayin is in the Gush Etzion block, go ahead. There's nothing preventing Israel from annexing any part of Area C, other than there might be the EU might make some noise. There's a couple global players that might make some noise, but the Oslo Accords clearly have not been kept, really, by both sides for quite a long time. So Area A and B is currently the closest thing to a Palestinian state. The Palestinians could have some advantages of having statehood, but they really prefer the leadership. The leadership really prefers to stay in some sort of gray zone between autonomy and state, because that way they get a great deal. They get to keep getting aid from all over the world. That 90% of it gets absorbed by their leadership. Hardly any of it gets to the people. And they get a great deal. I don't think that the reality on the ground will change a lot. Meaning they're not going to, for example, move the checkpoint around to have Area C be like the rest of Israel, where you can go from where I live to Tel Aviv without going through a checkpoint. They won't do that because there's so many economic things. There's so many, such a mess. It's so complex. I don't even want to get into it. So I'm still going to be, if I go to the bus stop and wait there, I'm still just, I'm going to be vulnerable to a terror attack as I am today. That's what it seems to me. It's clear to me that this isn't the real solution. To me, the real solution is Israeli sovereignty in all of Judea and Samaria. This is taking apart the Palestinian Authority, not having there be no foreign form of sovereignty anywhere in the land of Israel other than the state of Israel.
Finally, Shlomo, how can the people of the nations be supporting and standing in prayer with Israelis at this time as they consider the next possible government?
The main thing to pray for is that whatever this deal is exactly, but when we get the full picture, a full deal that's involving several countries, whatever this deal is, that it be good, it do no harm to the people of Israel's sovereignty over this land. I don't like the idea of, here, let's give you a deal so that you reject it, so that then we're going to do what's right. I would rather say, let's do what's right from the start. Because once you come and say, we're willing to have there be a foreign sovereignty in the land of Israel, you're already hurting yourself spiritually. So I'd say, may God forgive us for our sin to the land of Israel, that we're willing to come and use it as a bargaining tool, even if it's as a facade. May he turn the deal, whatever the deals are, that it be for good, and that at the end of the day, move towards strengthening Jewish sovereignty over the land of Israel. And also, if people could pray for the people of Israel to know deep down what's right. I can't say what's right for each individual to put in to vote for, and I'm not representing a party that's running right now. For each Jew to have deep down the right feeling on the day of the elections and to get out and vote for the party that in the end will be led by God as much as possible. Because really, the problem is, if we were all on the right wavelength, if we were all certain of our right to defend, and we were all unabashedly, unapologetically pro a state of Israel from the Jordan to the sea, no questions asked. If we were all in that mindset, then the politicians that we would have would be representing that. And at the end of the day, the reason that the politicians we have are bringing us in the direction that they're bringing us is because of where we're at. So if that's a, that's something that it's all spiritual in my eyes.
Shlomo Gordon, thank you for being our guest today on Front Page Jerusalem.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Kevin, for that enlightening interview about the election process in Israel and what might be ahead with an announcement from the U.S. President Donald Trump concerning the deal of the century in the weeks to come. Well, our time is almost up for this week, but before we go, let's go for another look at the news from CFI Jerusalem News Desk with David Milburn.
Thanks again, Earl. 10 electric buses recently began operating on the streets of Jerusalem as part of the implementation of a government initiative to reduce air pollution in Israel's capital city. The buses were added to the number 15 line, which runs from the central bus station in Jerusalem to the area known as Talpiot. The Ministry of Environmental Protection gave the Eged Bus Company a 4 million shekel subsidy to purchase the electric buses, which have zero pollution emissions and much quieter operation. The drivers of the electric buses have been specially trained for their operation and will be the only ones permitted to drive them. A designated parking lot with charging stations was established in the Eged parking lot. The electric buses are charged for about 5 hours and can travel for 124 miles between charges. The Ministry of Environmental Protection said the buses were imported from China, where most of the world's electric buses are manufactured.
Thanks, David. Well, that's our show for today. We hope that you've enjoyed the program, everybody, and thanks for joining us. And please don't forget to support this station, because this station supports Israel. But before we go, let me invite you to join us again next week, right here on this same station, as we bring you all the latest news from Israel and the Middle East. So for now, on behalf of the entire staff of Front Page Jerusalem, I'm Earl Cox, reminding you that because God loves Israel, I do too.
You've been listening to Front Page Jerusalem. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com. Front Page Jerusalem is brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel Jerusalem, making a difference in Israel one life at a time. Front Page Jerusalem is a production of Level E Media, Incorporated.